is Patsy with the Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And at the bottom of the hour, my guest will be L.A. Chandler, and I'm excited to talk to her about her wonderful Art Deco mystery series, and I was supposed to see her at BoucherCon, but we don't have it. But right now, I have, what can I say, one of the most famous writers in the world, Rick Riordan. Hi, Rick.
Hi, good to be with you.
Well, it is amazing. I can't believe it. We're on the fifth and final book. Oh, I bet everybody's crying. The Trials of Apollo. And this new book is called The Tower of Nero. And I just have to ask, well, first of all, it asks an important question, but I have to ask you this important question. When you first walked into the classroom as a teacher, a young man, all eager with your first class, and you walked in, did any of the students look at you, what were they, ninth graders? Did they all, any of them look at you and say, oh, gee, Mr. Riordan, you're like a real superstar, a rock star?
I think it's safe to say that none of my students looked at me that way. So, especially in the beginning. I think I started in public school in New Braunfels, Texas, and I was teaching sixth grade.
Oh, sixth grade.
So, talking to 11-year-olds. Yeah, oh. They don't look at you like you're a superstar.
Oh, well. But now every sixth grader looks at you like a superstar. I mean, you are the rock star of authors. I mean, you sold over 100, I don't know. How many books do you know anymore? You've sold so many, and you're responsible for so many more.
Well, it's been quite a ride, yeah. And no, I would never have dreamed way back when I was a middle school teacher. And I did that for 15 years. I loved it. But no, I never thought I would be a children's writer. I just kind of evolved over time with my own son. I told him bedtime stories. That became Percy Jackson. And then my students told me I should write it down. The next thing I know, here I am, and I'm a writer.
And I mean, you have filled auditoriums with thousands happy children screaming and yelling for you, just as I would have been screaming and yelling for a beetle. But they love you, and I think you actually. You could easily fill up a stadium. You could take the Astrodome or one of those majors and fill it up with your fans because they've grown up with you, and they're not ready actually to give up. It's so funny. Some of your fans are like so sad. They're so sad. They can't believe it's over. And of course, they all know, and they should know you by now that you're never over. You're gonna be right now.
Boy. Oh, sure. Yeah. If you're a writer, I don't think ever stop writing. So of course I'll keep writing books. But it is the end of an era. I mean, I agree. It is a little sad.
It's like
graduating. You know, you are happy to graduate and move on to different things, but it's also very sad because you know you're never gonna be with this exact group of characters again, and you are moving on from something that was a big part of your life.
And this last book in this particular series, The Tower of Nero, asks a very, very important question, and a universal question, I think. Can 17-year-old mortals get stomach ulcers? I thought that was so good. Yes, I think they do. They're full of angst, aren't they?
Oh, absolutely, yes. And this particular hero, I mean, being a former god, you know, Apollo has a lot of complaint. This is the book where we finally find out, has he learned enough and become human enough, really, and humble enough to take his place as a god again on Mount Olympus?
So his name is Lester Papadopoulos, which I love.
Just rolls off the tongue.
Doesn't it? It's a beautiful name. And you came up with it, and you made him just an ordinary mortal, and worse than that, you made him, you gave him a boss. Tell us about this relationship.
Oh, goodness, yes. Well, he fell to Earth, and this has actually happened in the original mythology stories where Apollo was punished by Zeus and sent to be immortal for a while and learn his lesson. And he did have to work for mortals like kings and do their bidding. In this case, he falls to earth and happens, the first person he runs across is this little girl, Meg McCaffrey, who's like 12 years old. Very bossy, though, and she says, okay, you have to serve someone. You will serve me. I am now your lord and master. And so they have this very interesting relationship where Meg, who is a demigod herself, basically can tell Apollo, the former god, to do whatever she wants. So, you know, as you can imagine, that goes over real well with Apollo.
Oh, really? Yeah. It's in the last book, that's one where they were in California doing the road trip. Right?
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, that was fun. That was a good one. I've done that road trip many times, and I enjoy taking it with them.
Yes, well, that's the fun thing about it. I love using the books as a form of travel and thinking about, oh, yes, you know, this, St. Louis, that's where Percy blew up the Memorial Arch. What trouble can we get in at the Smithsonian in Washington, D.C.? You know, it's a lot of fun thinking about all these hijinks the characters can get up to.
Well, you certainly do. And I love that you feel it. Well, it's funny. And this is the wonderful thing, you know, an author can have so much fun with his characters, his places. And for example, you'll mention the Olive Garden. So forever after, anybody who's read your books, we go to the Olive Garden, we think, oh, we think about you. And IKEA, I mean, we think about you. So, I mean, this is really such a clever way to, you know, always keep your name out there for your fans.
I never thought of it that way, but I, as long as I didn't, you know, ruin the breadsticks for you, I guess that's good.
Not at all. I have a feeling many times, you know, groups, and now I think millennials, because, you know, this has taken a little while to get to book five. I mean, they're like young people. They meet, well, if anybody can meet anymore anywhere, but if they meet at Olive Garden, you might actually come right up in as a topic of conversation, because they, you know, isn't this nice? This is why I named this program Joy on Paper. It is so much fun to see your words and to see what you can do with your words.
Oh, absolutely. It's amazing when a story takes on a life of its own, and it really becomes not just mine anymore. It becomes the property of the readers and the fans, and it becomes their world as much as it is mine.
Well, I think there have been conversations about Sybil at the Olive Garden. And one of my favorite characters, only because I love bookstore owners. I love stories about bookstore owners. You know, ever since I read Carolyn Hart's book, Death on Demand, I've always dreamt of having a bookstore, but I was always too sensible to get myself involved in such a financial crisis. But Ella the Harpy, let's talk about her and her cat.
She's a bird lady of, I think she's probably on the autism spectrum somewhere. And she's very high functioning, and she has an incredible memory, but, you know, she doesn't necessarily get along with humans very well. She's great with books, though, and she's great with cats. And so, you know, the bookstore was kind of a natural fit for her. So she has this bookstore now in New Rome, one of the settings, and she is busily trying to write down everything she remembers from every book she's ever read and make sure that she has a copy of that book in her store. And, of course, they have a bookstore cat named Aristophanes. She's a character near and dear to my heart. I can definitely relate to her.
Oh, and I think many people love that part about Aristophanes. Why so fat?
Yes, because as Apollo puts it, he suspects that Aristophanes ate all the other bookstore cats. That's his theory.
Yeah, it could be. And I have an author on who has a very prominent cat in her story, and I think she fears sometimes this could happen. This could happen. Wow, you know, it's just one thing after another. And of course, in this particular book, we're going to find out what's going to happen. And it's exciting. Tell us about what tell us what else do you want to tell us about this particular story?
Oh gosh, well, I mean, it's probably the most interesting thing about the trials of Apollo has been the growth. I mean, you wouldn't think that a 4,000-year-old god would have much character growth to do. He's kind of a static character, but because Apollo has become human, he has had to learn so much and change so drastically to learn how to get along, how to succeed, and how to do without his powers, that I think it's been the most satisfying story arc that I've ever written, just watching him grow as a character. So that's been a whole lot of fun.
And I think by him being human, you've created this for all the readers, that the possibilities of really doing good if you learn to be, what it is to do good and how you can change. And I think there is that element is very strong in the stories.
Yeah, that's true. I think that you can't change people, but people can change if they choose to themselves. And this is one of those instances where, you know, Apollo has made a choice that he's going to try to be different.
Well, you have created such a wonderful world here. Of course, in this one, they're in... what I love is Camp Jupiter. And I was thinking of, you know, painting the wall behind me purple.
Oh, right.
Yeah, you know.
I think you should.
Yeah, you're becoming associated with that. What happened to your book tour? Can you still tour this year?
It's you know, like everything in these strange times, it's very much of a challenge. We can't do a physical tour, but we have done a virtual tour that I think, you know, Disney Publishing has been fantastic, and they've done such a great job of kind of trying to recreate the experience for kids. So we have virtual events. We have 8 coming up, and all different cities are hosting them. They're all sold out, which you wouldn't think a virtual event could sell out, but they have. And so they've created great content. We have a show to put on. We're having guest star authors on every different event. And at every stop, it's different. And they tell me that they're going to do the trials of Rick like they did the trials of Apollo. So that's a little scary. I'm not sure what that's
well, fun. It is a shame because this. I think your books really are so wonderful, and really at this time, kids really need these kind of books. Wonderful adventures that keep them occupied, and I just feel so sorry for all the kids with the masks and everything, and not being able to see you live because, you know, you are a rock star. I think if you, when you walk out onto the stage, it erupts with and when kids erupt, they erupt.
Well, I have faith that we will get back to doing that again at some point, and we will all probably appreciate it more than we ever did. So, you know, I guess that's the upside. And if anything good has come out of this, I do think that it has gotten a lot of people reading.
Exactly, exactly.
Rediscovering the joys of books.
And everybody, get this book. It's Rick Riordan's The Trials of Apollo, and this 5th book in the series, and it's called The Tower of Nero. And what is your website so people can go there?
Sure. Disney has a great one. It's called Reed Riordan, readriordan.com.
Okay. Well, everybody, if you have a child in your, well, and I'm telling you, all the millennials are still reading you. I don't care. They're going to be reading you until they're 50, 60. They go back, you know, once you have one of these books. And the new cover is gorgeous. So I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today, Rick. It's always wonderful to talk to you, and a thrill to talk not just to you, but to all the other authors that you have given a chance to really break into this whole mythology world. And you've done a marvelous job with everybody.
Oh, my pleasure. Good talking with you.
Okay. Bye-bye now. Bye. Wow. Rick Riordan. It is such a beautiful cover for you on anybody on YouTube. I'm holding it up. It is actually gorgeous. And then what I love most about his books is they are not dark. They are not dark. And some young adult books are a little bit dark. But these ones are just pure fun. And as I said, they've embossed the cover with gold. Oh, it's so nice. Gold and red. It's so beautiful. Publishers love you when they emboss your cover. That's a sign. That's a sign. That's what you should be aiming for. You should say, someday I want my book to be published, and it's going to be embossed in gold. And then you can rub your fingers on it. It feels so good. Oh, it feels so good. And, of course, they use the top quality paper. Of course, now he's with Disney. But, you know, he started off as a school teacher, 15 years as a school teacher. I am sure when he started off, he had no idea whatsoever that he would one day sell, well, he sold at least 100 million books. And because he also has this Rick Riordan Presents, where he presents other authors, they've all sold 100 million books. So he's responsible for sales of a quarter of a billion books already. And he's just started. He's still a young guy. So this can happen. It's just the miracle of getting the right story on paper and running with it, being true to your characters, finding that joy on paper. And Rick certainly has. He's found it. And he has also found the joy of, that green paper. I don't know, although nowadays they don't give us green paper. They don't want to give us coins. We can't get quarters. I can't get quarters. And I have to do my laundry. I went and I asked, I said, just give me four quarters. I only have enough to wash the clothes and not to dry the clothes. They wouldn't. I mean, I went to a very famous, very well-known national chain. And I said, please give me four quarters. I need to do my laundry. And the guy wouldn't do it. He said, oh, no, it's a policy. We can't. I said, yeah, four won't hurt you. What do you have anything I can buy for a penny? So actually, I did land up buying a couple of things at 99 cents, but two different trips. I did two different trips, 99 cents. So it'd be taxed, and it's $1.06, so I get three quarters each time. It's crazy. And I didn't, because I didn't have time to go driving up to the bank. Anyway, this is a wonderful book. You know, it's funny. It's like the Harry Potter books in the sense that you become very loyal to them and you know the characters very well. And I actually love these books. I think they're more cheerful. And if you become a fan of his, and I also like the mythology. I really like the mythology because he's very accurate. If you go back, once you you get interested in mythology, Greek and Roman mythology, next thing you know, maybe you'll start studying Latin, and then you can translate. You can translate the Iliad into, you know, and you have really a lot of fun with it. But definitely, he is fantastic. Now, I'm going to play one poem before we leave, and then this is from somebody who I love, and he's so good here always to me and to Joy on Paper. But then after that, we're going to have a commercial. Then I'm coming back with L.A. Chandler, a cozy mystery writer. She's extraordinary. Anyway, we'll be back soon.
Who's for Dinner by J.S. Lamb. In some cultures, they love their neighbors. In others, they might eat them. If you're not sure which is which, be careful how you treat them.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Have you ever faced disaster? The Red Cross is always there for you. The Red Cross responds to a call for help every 8 seconds. They have never turned anyone down. Now they need your financial support so that they can be ready to help you when the need arises. Donate online at redcross.org. Thank you.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
Do you dread being called on to speak at meetings or family functions? Have you envied those who can sway an audience with well-chosen words? Do you know that people who speak well earn more money, earn more rewarding careers? Gain the confidence to master any speaking situation. Toastmasters will allow you to find your voice. Go to toastmasters.org to locate the club nearest you.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hi, this is Patsy with a Z, and I am back, and in a few minutes, L.A. Chandler is going to be calling in, and I'm so eager to talk to her because I love her books, and we were supposed to meet at BouchCon this year, but meanwhile, I want to tell you, please go to my website, radio-joyonpaper, and I'm updating the website a lot. There are some really great interviews that I've had recently. Some of them have just, I've been so happy with them because I've just had so much fun. One of them that I just put up yesterday was Kelly Braffett. Now, she is married to Owen King, and Owen King is Stephen King's son. Now, I love talking to Kelly Braffett. Her books are sort of dark. So if you're not into really dark, fantasies, it might not be what you're interested in. But the interview is so much fun because there's nothing dark about Kelly. It was one of the funniest interviews I've ever had. And I so enjoyed talking to her. And she just loves writing. And she has actually, she loves the word that I've used here on Joy on Paper. Joy. She has found that joy on paper. And so it's one of the funniest interviews. And I've also uploaded the interview with Owen. Now, Owen King is, he is, of course, the son of Stephen King. But his book, is about actually the one that we talked about an independent filmmaker. And again, this was one of my favorite interviews because Owen is, again, delightful. Not at all dark or scary or anything. He's just silly and fun. And I just love the two of them. They are wonderful. So I hope that you will go to my website, radio-joy on paper. And while I'm waiting, I also want to give a little plug to Morgan Exteriors. It is October, and we usually have maybe a hurricane or two in October, and I am not afraid this year. I don't worry. I don't care. I'm not watching what's happening in the Atlantic. If anything is heading our way, I don't care because I have these wonderful windows, and I don't hear anything. I don't hear the birds even. So I have to open the window a crack in the morning so that I can hear the birds. But other than that, they are just perfect. They're wonderful. And the nicest thing, there are two great things about these windows. One, they protect my books from UV rays. And two, they save me on electricity. And I need some electricity to talk to my next guest. La 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 la. La 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 la. Ha ha. Oh, I always think that when I introduce L.A. Chandler. Hi.
Hi, Patsy. How are you?
Okay. Well, when I get to sing la 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 la, I was in a production. This is very funny. I was in a production of Fiddler on the Roof, and on stage, much to the director's chagrin, because I can't act or sing or dance. But I was the most enthusiastic member of this cast.
That is not hard to imagine.
And I mean, I just loved it. And those exercises at the beginning, those voice exercises, I could have done them all day long. And so, yeah, exactly. You know, if I could go back, I think I would have been an actress, because it is wonderful to be on the stage. Well, you know, you love to be in front of people, and you talk in front of people, right?
I do.
So we have the same thing?
Oh. It's true. And I always love your enthusiasm. It's very contagious.
Well, we're going to talk about your books, but I want to also talk about writing. Let's talk first about we're not going to be at VoucherCon.
I know.
It's so sad. It's sad. But your mysteries are so wonderful. Tell us about the series and tell us about, let's talk about all three of them in a row, and then after that we'll talk about writing.
I love it. Sure. I write the Art Deco Mystery Series, and it's a different kind of take on the 1930s, focusing on New York City. And one of the main characters is Mayor Fiorello LaGuardia, and the protagonist is his fictitious aide, Lane Sanders. And the reason it's a different take, and actually I think it's really apropos for the season we're going through right now, is because the more I looked at the 1930s, I really felt it had been pigeonholed so much into being about the Depression, and it was depressing and all about the shanty towns, and you just have these black and white images in your mind. But the more I researched it, and especially Art Deco, which I love, and the music and the theater and the film that was going on and the writing, I started to get a feel for the liveliness that was in spite of all the adversity of the Depression. And Fiorello LaGuardia in his city hall really manifest that perfectly. They always talk about him, the journalists, as they couldn't keep up with him. He's a firecracker. And I was like, gosh, we really need to hear more about that. And this is even before this year, because it's on the third book of the series. And I really think it has a lot to say for us, because the humor was incredible and the art was amazing, and it had such grit to it, despite the fact that it's right between the two world wars in the middle of the Depression. And I felt like, you know, we don't hear enough of that kind of aspect of the vitality that was happening. And also, I think they're actually really great books to be reading right now.
Oh yes, please, yes.
Right? Yes. We really understand it. And actually, it wasn't that much longer after the flu epidemic of 1918 either. And, you know, it really has a lot to say for that. And the camaraderie that people had. And I saw a lot of that right after 9/11 when we moved to New York City. I saw that too. You know, huge adversity, but the way people come together is really, it's really inspiring.
Well, exactly. So, yeah. The 1930s looked really happy to me compared to 2020.
Oh, goodness. Yes.
And the people, you're right, they had a different attitude, because I have been really disappointed in people. My local supermarket, I saw people jumping on a woman who ran into the store to pick up a birthday cake without a mask, but they jumped on her. And I was so shocked, really. And it wasn't. So that's exactly why 1930s seemed much more friendly to me.
Oh, well, it was edgy there. You know, I always think it's funny. There are good parts and bad parts, of course, to every era and history. But I do think overall, you know, we as a culture, I think, are more even a kind and things like that. I mean, we're seeing some crazy stuff going on right now, but you know, in the 30s, there was a lot of, you know, there was a lot of unrest, too, that I think we have come a long way in a positive way, too. And I really do feel like the three books helped to take a better look at what was really going on. And there's a lot of actual cameos and historic references.
Oh, I love the
really
cameos. I love the cameos. Of course, one of them is Orson Welles and the Winston Churchill. I love Winston Churchill. I have been obsessed lately. I've listened 3 times to the Audible version of Andrew Roberts' Walking with Destiny, because it is an amazing book about Churchill. And so, just having him in your book, I mean, tell us about that.
Sure. Well, the third book is The Pearl Dagger, and that one, the main mysteries always take place in New York City, but I do take my characters on what I call field trips. So in The Pearl Dagger, they go to London for a spell that is involved in what they're researching about this mystery. And I really try to bring in people that really were in those circles at the time. And Vera LaGuardia was definitely close with FDR and Eleanor Roosevelt. And really, the mayor of New York City was always thought of as kind of not second in command to the president, but really a close runner-up. So he really would have been in the circles of other country leaders and whatnot. But, of course, when they go to London, I have to have him run into Winston Churchill because I feel the same way as you. And, you know, at that time, this is early 1937 is the time of this book, and Winston Churchill really felt himself as in a political wilderness at the time. So he didn't, you know, nobody, you know, he was definitely in the, you know, the magazines and whatnot, but he wasn't yet the Winston Churchill that we've all come to know. And so I thought it'd be really fun for them to be in on that. And so he's in there. She also runs into J.R.R. Tolkien. It's the following fall that The Hobbit comes out. And so he definitely would have been in those circles too. And so it's really fun. And I feel like that is one of the best parts of reading historical fiction is you get a feel for the era of what else was really going on. And I think sometimes that's the stuff that's missed when we have history lessons is we tend to learn history in pockets versus what was all that's going on and what it might feel like, you know, to be in that certain time frame. So I think that's why cameos are interesting to bring in, not only for just interest and whatnot, but and of course I had to put in his martini that he always loved to have, Winston Churchill's. And so you can bring in those feels, but it also gives you an aspect of what it was like, you know, at that time frame.
And you do a lot of research, I know, because and you, that's why your books, I think, are so... They're so rich and they're so, they have such levels because you have all the history of the buildings, which I love, the people mm-hmm. that you bring into the stories. It's just, it's one of these series that you can start, of course, at the third book, but if you're home, and so many people are, this is a perfect yeah. trio here to binge on and get into that era and have that fun and go to El Morocco and go here and go there.
Yes.
It's just,
yes.
isn't it wonderful?
It is. And, you know, the audio version is really nice, too, of all three books. And there is only three. Sometimes it's hard when you find a series that you want to go back to the beginning, but there's 25 of them. It can be a little more daunting unless you're a series person. But with three, it's pretty quick. But, yeah, and I love bringing in places. There's a couple, too, that I have in the books that were around in the 30s, but that are still around that you can go to. Like one of my favorite is this in New York. It's called the Ophelia Lounge, and it was started as an all-female club, and it's at the top of the Beekman Building on 49th and 1st Avenue, and they refurbished it just a few years ago, and so I have Lane and Finn going there for a drink, and of course there's a big part of the mystery that happens there, but you can go today and there's like 360 views of the city, and they have all these vintage cocktails and it's beautiful. But I love that too, because I think some of these big cities like London and New York, they are changing and growing, but there's a timeless aspect to them as well, and that's what's really fun. I mean, you walk down some of the side streets in New York and you might not know, if you didn't see the cars and the fashion, it could be almost any era. And I love that about cities.
Oh, so do I. Last time I was in New York, last May, I can't believe it. Not this May, maybe 2019. These months have sort of all blended in.
Yeah.
Of course, I was at the Algonquin Hotel, which is my favorite hotel.
I love it there.
I can spend, well, and I did. I spent 2 days in the lobby. That's I set up all my meetings there because I didn't want to run around New York City. You know, it's difficult to run around New York City, and of course that was mm-hmm. before the pandemic, and people were going in elevators, and even then I didn't like the idea of going in elevators. So I just set up my headquarters in the Algonquin, and that's a perfect place, isn't it?
Oh, I love it. And that whole history with Dorothy Parker and the Vicious Circle. I wrote an article about that once. There's that one painting that's right there in the main dining room of Dorothy Parker and their circle that they used to have lunches there on Tuesdays. And I thought it was so inspiring to be in a place where there's so much history and so many footsteps that you get to walk with. And, of course, they have their cat that's there. That's like they always have an in-house cat that's been there forever and is adorable. So that's always nice.
Exactly. And of course, I love walking around New York. And speaking of Churchill, I always sort of stop there at 76th Street and 5th Avenue if I am walking and think about the fact that he was hit by a car there and how the world would have changed if he had been killed there in New York City. So, yeah.
Can you imagine? Yeah, yeah. So much history changes on a dime, turns on a dime, that you're just, oh, to think of what could happen. It's true.
Yeah. And of course, now you have written a character. I think that Lane Sanders is just, she's, you know, we'd like to have a plucky woman, but there's more to her than just being plucky. There's a depth to her. She has a back history that we don't always know everything about. And she's just a really beautifully developed character. I thought she's delightful and just somebody who has charm, and she's smart, and of course, well, she's the assistant to the mayor, so she's got a lot of things going for her, doesn't she?
And her boyfriend. Thank you for saying that. I'm glad you like her so much. I like interesting characters, too, that you feel like you get to know, and I wanted her to be, you know, she's definitely not perfect, and I feel like, but she's interesting, and I've always valued interesting over perfection. And I feel like her, I like in The Gold Pawn is the second book. So the first book is A Silver Gun, and you're kind of introduced to all the characters. And then The Gold Pawn is where she has to face more of the ghosts of her past, and you do see some more of the things that she's really had to wrestle with, you know, to get where she's at. And then the third book, The Pearl Dagger, is more of where her love interest, Finn Brody, has to do that, too. And I kind of like that. I like it when characters are learning and growing, and that, you know, you can be inspired maybe by the things that they're inspired about. I love it that Lane likes to really take in her surroundings, and she's constantly got kind of an artful look on life. And I feel like that's why she pairs so well with Fiorello LaGuardia, too. She kind of grounds him in a way. And, you know, he's constantly flying around the city and solving problems. And then she helps him maybe go a little deeper, too. And but that's been fun, too. You know, a lot of my mysteries are spun off on the things in history that we don't know about. Like, it's actually real crime that I focus on. But then I write the parts that the history books don't tell us. And so that's been kind of fun, too, to take aspects that really did happen and then think through the what if, you know, what if this happened?
Well, and you do a beautiful job. And I must add that I like Finn Brody very much as a love interest.
Good.
As a love interest, yes, definitely. Well, so we have the three books. What's happening with you now? I mean, are you just sitting around twiddling your thumbs? No, I think you must be working.
Definitely, yeah. Well, I have the next two books planned, but, you know, the publishing world is kind of up in the air right now. So I will definitely write books 4 and 5. I even know where they're going. But 4 focuses actually on the Chrysler Building and a famous club there called the Cloud Club. And it's kind of where the businessmen of the world held court there. And, of course, Lane figures out how to barge in there herself. And then there's and then that's like spring of 37. So the Hindenburg crash happens in May of 37 right here. So that will definitely come into play too. So there's lots of delicious history and fun stuff coming up. They don't have a time frame on those yet at all. But I'm also working on one that is finished that my agent is just now working with on Christmas. And it's a totally different, it's a standalone book. It's a blend of both history and fiction. And so it's a modern day journalist that is charged with a story of digging up the human interest stories on some of the lost Christmas traditions. And she begrudgingly takes this because she thinks it's a fluff assignment. And she comes to New York where there's actually a lot in real life, pivotal things happen that turn Christmas into the holiday that we know and celebrate. And she's surprised by the depth that she finds. And so she's talking to historians and ancestors of people that are giving her these stories. She finds a lot more than she's expecting for, and it ends up being a story that will change her life as well as the lives of the characters. So it's really fun to work on, and it really is a blend of actual history. And at the very end, I tell in the author notes, you know, what's fictitious and what's real, and, you know, what are nods to, like, of the first, there's a nod to the first African-American NYPD officer, Sam Battle, who also is in my Art Deco mystery series. There's a whole bunch of veterans. There's a really wonderful, my favorite war hero. He ended up being a POW in the Korean War, but he actually survived the Holocaust, came to America because he wanted to pay back America, help her, because he remembered the day that he was in one of the concentration camps that the Americans, you know, busted down the fence and ended up fighting in the Korean War. And it's just wonderful. There's just so many wonderful moments, and even from the Civil War. And so that's been a total joy. And it actually stemmed from a talk that I gave years ago for, there's a nonprofit that works with the United Nations, and they do a tea for the women of the United Nations every holiday season in December. And they'd asked me to come and give a talk about the traditions of Hanukkah and Christmas. And so that's where the idea had come from, about if I just discovered all these yummy, kind of lost stories, like the first Christmas tree that went up at Rockefeller Center, you know, things like that. So that's been my...
Oh, this sounds lately. Like it's going to be fun. When's it coming out?
Yeah. I don't know. It literally is just starting to go out. I think that my agent is shopping it from soon. So hopefully next year I would love.
Oh, yeah. That does sound delicious. Just what we need. Well, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, your whole thing of joy, that's what I was thinking, too. I felt like it was so nice to work on, because it was such a feel-good story. But depth, too. You know, it wasn't fluffy. It was like there's a lot of grit here, but how people overcame, and there's kindness and forgiveness, you know, through it. So it's been so nice to work on something joyful and feel good in an era that I feel like I was really craving that, you know.
Well, you are really so talented, and I wanted to ask you about the most recent awards you've been nominated for, that you've won. You're getting so many awards now that you're going to have a special room for them.
Oh, thanks. It was a good year. We were so sad that all so many conferences got canceled, because that's some of the best parts. It was such a surprising part of being an author. I didn't know, I love writing, but I didn't know how connecting with other readers and writers was going to be such a wonderful perk. You know, meeting you was such great, you know, I mean, that I just, it was so unexpected. And the people part of it was really such a joy. So, yeah, the Pearl Dagger, it won the Suspense Magazine, the Crimson Scribe Award, and then there's a Gannick Apple Award. It's New York for outstanding work in fiction. And then I was nominated for an Agatha and a Lefty Award. And then that's a Left Coast Crime. And then the two coming up are the Anthony Award, which goes with the World Mystery Conference VoucherCon, and then the McCavity Award, which is Mystery Readers Journal. And both of those are for Best Historical. So we'll find out. I think it's like the weekend of October 17th is the virtual VoucherCon.
That's when we were supposed to be there. But yeah,
I know. Ugh. Yes. So we'll find out there. But the group I'm nominated with for both the McCavity and Anthony are some of my favorite authors.
I know. So it would have been so much fun. And you stand out. You stand out for several reasons. Tell everybody why you stand out. Why people, if they're just walking down the hallway, the thousands of people, and they're walking down the hallway and they're not paying attention to faces, which I was very shocked at BouchyCon in Dallas, that there was more, I don't know, like talking to people. But if people are walking down the hallway, how do they recognize you?
My red shoes. Is that what you're alluding
yes,
to?
Yes. I mean, we see her coming. And that's a wonderful thing. An author needs to stand out from the crowd.
It's hard. Yeah, VoucherCon's huge. It's a really big. And that's how I started it, because Lane Sanders, her favorite shoes are her red high-heeled Mary Janes. And that's where it all started. And the very first VoucherCon I went to was, I think it's 2017 in Toronto. And I started thinking about it because I was like, well, it is hard to, you know, to see who's who, and, you know, until you start to get to know people, you know, how do you stand out? So I started wearing red shoes everywhere I go. Now I've got a lot of red shoes. Thank goodness, I love red shoes, so it's fine. But yeah, it's fun. And I do have even some of my military buddies who write things that are completely different from mine really love to take pictures of my red shoes, which is fun, like Jack Carr and Don Bentley.
I know. People are, I saw that. I said, what are they doing? What is, and they're taking pictures of her feet. I thought that was pretty cool. And it did. It made you stand out. It got you noticed. It's sort of like Kathy Ace. You know, she's the mystery writer from Vancouver, and she wears these very, you know, flamboyant flowered dresses. Well, you always see her, you notice her, and that's the whole point of it. As a matter of fact, when I in Dallas, I was disappointed because so many people were just, you know, it was cold. It was cold, I admit, but they just wore black and gray, and you couldn't tell anybody. You couldn't tell the authors from the fans. And right. In your case, of course, you know, we can see your feet.
There you go. Exactly.
I think it adds that sparkle that you know you're noticeable and you're fun. And then we can go around, everybody can see you, and they can go la 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 la.
I love it.
Right? Because that's right. I think of you like that. That's I always think of you like that. And that's good, because that's what you want. You want people to remember you, right?
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And it's so nice. There's so many great readers at VoucherCon too. I've met so many wonderful people that are just, you know, become really good friends, you know, and you can keep in touch on social media. And I think people really find their tribe at these conferences, whether you're a reader or a writer. And because all of us are readers, you know, even the writers, we all read so much. That's our first love, you know. And I think it's really fun to see people finding each other that way. It's really nice.
And yeah, to find out, you mentioned 25 books in a series, and 25 books, it's the Jack Reacher series. 25.
Yeah.
It's coming up.
And Charles Todd, he has a lot that there's a lot.
And Lee Child, and now Andrew Child. And of course I think you know both of them. They're going to be on Joy on Paper to talk about this new thing where, you know, Andrew Child is taking over for his brother Lee Child, who neither one of them are named Child, but anyway, that's it. but it's going to be fun to see the new series, well, the ongoing series, because now it's also going to be streaming video. Can you imagine? And I think I would love to see yours on streaming video. Oh, I would love to see yours. Series.
I would too.
It would be so wonderful. Beautiful.
Yeah.
There, talk about the art director having fun. I mean, wow.
Exactly.
The clothes.
Yes, the
clothes. Oh,
exactly.
My. The locations, the clothes.
I love putting the cars in there too.
Oh my gosh. I mean, and the mayor was so flamboyant himself. There are actors out there who need this part, and some really delightful actresses who could be, you know, play Lane. And I really do hope that, and you have to promise me, when you get a movie deal, I think it'll be a streaming video deal, you'll come on and break the news here on Joy on Paper.
I would love to do that.
Will you do that? Because I think it's coming. We have a lot of these English ones, but I want an American New York City. I love New York City. I love old New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And your books were made to be on streaming video. So that's what I hope for you. Okay.
I love that. Thank you.
Okay. Well, la la. Where can people see you and find you, and what's your website?
Just lachandler.com is my website, and I'm on all social media under L.A. Chandler, on Twitter and Instagram and Facebook. And I have a lot of different events coming up that are more viewable, at least virtually, especially BoucherCon. If you've been going to go to that, I'm on a couple on a panel, and then, of course, the different awards that will be talked about. And that's about it for now until things kind of get rolling again. With everything open. Yeah.
Well,
thank you.
I think you should win. I hope you win, and I will have you back, and we can talk more. And I'm really eager for this Christmas book. So L.A. Chandler, spelt with an A at the end. Chandler. Beautiful name. And thank you again so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper.
Thanks for having me, Joy. Take care. Bye. Please.
Okay. Bye-bye. Okay. Wow. What a girl. She's so nice. And so that is it. Whoa. What a day. Getting to talk to Rick, because Rick Riordan is, wow, he is so busy. And so I was really thrilled that I got to talk to him. And of course, L.A. Chandler is just a wonderful, wonderful author. Very, very, if you're looking for an author who really is engaging and the books are well written, and as we said, the 1930s suddenly look really, like really fun years there. You know, we had Fred Astaire and Ginger Rogers, and we had people dancing down the street. We had all sorts of musicals going on and all sorts of things happening on Broadway. And and we look back on it and we think, yeah, that wasn't bad, because we would not call these years the Roaring Twenties. This is pandemic-y. Clorox Twenties. That's what we're going to call this. It's going to be the Clorox Twenties. Oh, well, what can we do? Anyway, what am I going to say? Oh, go back to my website for a minute. Radio-joyonpaper. There are lots of really great interviews up there. Check them out, because they're lots of fun. And meanwhile, remember what I always say. One of the joys of life is to see your words on paper, to hear them spoken in an audible book, or if you're very, very lucky, to hear those magic words, lights, camera, action, and your book will be turned into a major motion picture, streaming video, or a series on the Hallmark Channel. You never know, and you won't unless you start writing. So start today, and November is coming up, and it's going to be National Novel Writing Month, and it is a time for you to just say, I'm going to do it. I'm going to write a book in 1 month, 50,000 words, and my beautiful, beautiful goddaughter, Kanisha. Oh, we went and she tried on wedding dresses. She is so beautiful, and she did it 3 years now, she's always a winner. She's a winner all the time. Anyway, everybody, say something nice to somebody, and I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. Thank you for Clorox number 5. Oh, great. I smell so good. And so he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And everybody, have a great day. Fill it with joy. Nobody else is going to do it for you. You have to do it yourself. Bye-bye now.